Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the wonderful, the fabulous, the refluoridated district of Waikato, is where my very special guest, Evelyn Gilbert, is in at the moment, which is great, because we need a report from somebody who has, shall we say, background knowledge of a region so retarded that to be relieved of toxicity without your consent is something that they protest and reverse. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Vinny.
Her website, ladies and gentlemen, is Aotearoa, a wider perspective.wordpress.com. Today, we're going to be talking about a New Zealand politician by the nomenclature Crusher, otherwise known as Crusher Collins, Judith Collins. Now, there's a word that rhymes with hunt, And the word face, and it's just the kind of face that she has. I do believe it's quite horrific, terrifying, and allegedly the entire region where she's from also looks like this. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
I wouldn't say exactly like that, but pretty much the same. Yeah.
God doesn't have a sense of humour in the Waikato way here. He's just like a really dark lord, you know, like Sauron. He's not exactly handing out the freebies or the good fortune to all the good little boys and girls. So, speaking of Crusher, what kind of news have you got for us, Evelyn?
Well, there's not so much news as that she just has this incredible skill at hanging on in her function as minister. For those of you who don't know about this, she has just been to China, where she was going to speak about and discuss with the leaders human rights issues. But she used that time to discuss financial advantages for her husband's dairy company. And, of course, a lot of people would like to see her leave because that, of course, is a huge conflict of interest, Vinny.
Exactly. In what way? And can we define this and sort of flesh out the issue here?
What do you mean?
Well, let's talk about in terms of how much financial interest and conflict of interest are we talking about here? Like, how big is her husband's farm? What do they stand to gain?
I wouldn't know about the exact size, but the company itself has been known to donate the grand total of $85,000 to the National Party coffers in exchange for these conversations she's had with Chinese officials under the guise of a, you know, a friendly meal, which in China, by the way, is the preferred way of doing business.
Can I ask what exact ministership does Judith Collins have? She's the Minister for Justice, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Okay. Yes, she is.
So what would the Minister of Justice in New Zealand and any Chinese officials know about human rights exactly? Other than violating them and knowing how to do so without getting busted. Like,
well, in her job as Justice Minister, she would, of course, have some reason to discuss human rights and human rights issues. The thing is, though, why would a small country with only 4 million people get in the way of a juggernaut of 1 billion people such as China? There is just no way you can discuss human rights and expect them to listen. You know, it's a joke. So
that would be like the residents of Chatham Islands telling New Zealand what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that, of course, would never happen. Other than that, of course, China, which is on the verge of collapsing financially and which has a lot of extremely rich elite party members who are all just dying to get out of China with their ill-gotten gains and the money they print out of thin air. I mean, China prints about $250 billion a month at the moment to just kick the can down the road. All that money goes to the elite. It goes to the cronies of the elite. And these people are all buying farms, land, apartments. In London the other day, somebody bought an apartment for over $250 million. We're talking six-room silly apartment. So we're talking about a group of people who is just really, really keen to get out of China.
Now, incidentally, a coffee sponsor of mine who we're going to be launching shortly used to work in Vietnam during the mid to late 90s, and he was doing business with a Chinese diplomat, and this diplomat told him that New Zealand's on their list. And he goes, "What list?" And he goes, "Well, countries we're going to take over." And he goes, what do you mean? How are you going to do that? Are you going to invade with armies and stuff?" And they go, no. "We've got plenty of political dissidents and things like that in China that we don't need or want. And we've got plenty of money that we can make up out of thin air. So we're just going to stuff a whole bunch of money in their pockets, send them to New Zealand, and instruct them to buy homes and small businesses."
And no, that's very interesting.
And before you know it, we'll own New Zealand. And my friend returned home and in the mid-2000s, after hearing that about 10 years ago, and he was like, pretty successful, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, and in this particular case, it becomes even more interesting. Orifida is a dairy company, and they're selling milk to China, and that milk gets bottled and branded and gets sold at a ridiculously high price. But not just that. What just has come out is that Orifida also now has bought huge swaths of land north of Auckland and on the west coast of the South Island. And while that land is used as dairy land, it is also known to have gold under it. And they are now prospecting and they want to start digging up gold.
Well, what's the ramifications for that? I mean, how are they exactly going to get all these permits and what? Oh, yeah, that's right. We've got corporate banksters in control of the country that rip up natural land for resources all the time.
And some of it already has permits, has consent. So, and this makes it even more curious because, of course, you know, New Zealand itself doesn't have gold in its coffers. It doesn't have a gold storage. And at this moment, we're looking at China buying up every ounce of gold they can get their hands on, not just the government, but the people of China, because they know full well that the fiat currency system that is still being used in the Western world, which is based on absolutely nothing because America also sold its gold from Fort Knox to India and China, primarily China and Russia. And what that means is that we're now basically saying, yeah, sure, dig up our land and take the gold with you to China. Although our money is worth absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, how are we going to back up the economy after all of this? You know, I don't think trading in Coromandel gold is going to work quite as well.
No, it won't. And so if you're saying, well, they want to buy up New Zealand, I'd say they'd probably be done by now. You know, they're buying all our profitable land and arable land, dairy companies. It turns out now mineable gold, which is financially, you know, which is profitable enough to do. And so, you know, I know that not 5 kilometers away from where I live, they are now prospecting for Black Sands, Chinese company, China Steel, or Sino Steel, is now prospecting for what they can find in the Black Sands, which apart from iron ore has titanium and other precious metals in there. And so, you know, it could be that maybe in a couple of years I can actually see the sea from where I live now, which I can't now because they're digging away the dunes.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful idea, you know, for your retirement and what have you. All this wonderful natural scenery that has now got a gargantuan gaping hole and large lakes of sulfuric acid. That stuff's really good. Oh, wait. No. It's not sulfuric acid, is it? That they use to clean off all the gold mining and everything like that?
No, that's cyanide, isn't it? Cyanide. Or mercury.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Of course. Why would they use an acid, Vinny, that would eat the thing that they're trying to steal?
What is also interesting is that Trans-Tasman Mining is currently trying to get a permit to start mining seabed black sands at Taranaki, which has a fallout along the entire west coast of the North Island, all the way up to Auckland and further, and which will create a huge death zone, and that black sand will also go to China.
You know, it just keeps getting better and better. I can't wait to see what they're going to unveil next year.
Or tomorrow.
Yeah. Hey, well, at least life is getting a little bit more exciting. I wonder what different way they're going to launch some kind of scumbaggery campaign to make me and my countrymen homeless today.
Yep.
Am I losing my sense of humour about this sort of thing? I don't think so. Hey, look, I wonder exactly how we can deal with this situation other than through humour. Because you go to the authorities and you tell them about these kind of things. You got evidence. You got everything you need to prove your case and exactly what all of these scum are doing. But unfortunately, the very authorities that are elected to frickin' protect you from these foreign scum are employed by said foreign scum to enrich said foreign scum.
Sure. I mean, John Key, after he's done, he doesn't care if National implodes. He will leave. He will get a nice cushy job and, you know, he'll probably travel around the globe convincing people that they should accept the Queen as the head of state, and not just the Queen, but the generations to come, which is, by the way, what he said he would do when he came away from Balmoral last year. People like Judith Collins will probably do the same.
There's just one big kettle of fish, you know. New Zealand, ladies and gentlemen, is not a country that, as the Transparency International Index would suggest, the least corrupt country in the world. If anything, it's kind of the opposite, an inversion. It's a nation where all of the people that are supposed to report corruption are so corrupt that they don't report any of it. It's all pervasive. You've got to love that. Moving on to the second half of the interview, we have NATO involvement in the Ukraine, I hear now, Evelyn.
Well, Yes, we do. In fact, at this moment, 6,000 troops, NATO troops from Sweden, ranging as far as Holland, the Netherlands, Sweden, England, Canada, France, they're all training in Poland and other Baltic countries. And while they're saying they're doing this just to protect those countries, you might wonder why it is that they're there. Added to that, there is a lot of army out of uniform which has been caught and arrested in the Ukraine, and they are advisors and to the new Ukrainian unelected government.
And? You know, well, what else is new?
Okay, you know? because of course, you know, we're here in New Zealand. What is so interesting about New Zealand at the moment is that in July 2012 or June 2012, I'm not sure, John Key signed an entirely new treaty, a new pact with NATO. A lot of people think it was just an extension of the older agreement, but he signed a brand spanking new pact with them. If you want to check this, go to the NATO site and search for a New Zealand agreement pact, and you will find all this. It's all out there on NATO, which is amazing, on the website. And what not a lot of people know is that last year there was a NATO training exercise, and I'm calling this NATO even though they didn't, on the South Island called Southern Katipo. And there were the Five I countries, it's all the Anglo-Saxon countries, France, and several countries that are on the verge of becoming Pacific members of NATO, because NATO wants to have at least 60% of its troops and resources stationed in the Pacific in the next 6 years. So
that,
you know,
might have something to do with protecting the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement's agenda. I don't know. Better yet, oceanic unionization, so that the troops can be everywhere to quell any domestic insurrection. No, we don't want to be slaves to a global empire.
Yeah. Well, I would say that the TPP actually is just a political arm of the same agreement. But what happened with Southern Katipo was that the scenario of that exercise was regime change.
It was, what was it, to invade New Zealand via beach landing and depose a democratically elected prime minister. Wasn't that the directive of the training exercise?
Well, they said, of course, to make it sort of sellable, that it was a leader who refused to step down after an election. The issue is that whether it's someone who doesn't want to step down, or whether it's a democratically elected leader, you are not entitled to go into a country and affect regime change. That is a war crime. So what they were effectively doing was training for a war crime. New Zealand was allowing to have 10 countries, including itself, all of whom were either long-term NATO members or on the verge of becoming members of NATO, and they were training for regime change. Not only that, at the same time they were training here, they were training in the Baltic countries on defending the Baltic countries, you know, Finland, Lettland, Lithuania, you know, Poland, defending against an invasion of a big country to the northeast of those countries. Well, there's only one big country to the northeast of those countries, that's Russia. Not only that, New Zealand was also involved in a training exercise in England for NATO with the quick response team. They are now having a quick response team. And what this, of course, amounts to is the fact that NATO wants to be the global army. And they are training different countries, and they're using soldiers from different countries, so that if they have to invade a country that they would otherwise not invade, they can always say, well, it's not the Russians invading or the Germans invading Holland. We're just using German soldiers to come down on the Dutch if they were to rebel against NATO rule. Or, you know, we have Australian soldiers here, or Polish or Ukrainian soldiers if we decide to say, no, we don't want to be members of NATO anymore.
Mm. Well, throughout history, it has been noted that if you want to suppress a population, using people who were born in that country is not a good idea because they refuse to shoot their countrymen. But if you bring in foreigners, on the other hand, they have no such qualms.
No, and or if even if you say, okay, well, we're going to have a couple of New Zealanders to make it legitimate to New Zealand population, but the rest of them are, you know, French.
It's like collaborators in a takeover bid, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So that's what they're working on at the moment. And what is happening in the Ukraine is interesting because they've been wanting control of the Ukraine, and they've been in particular wanting control over East Ukraine and the Crimea, because of course the Crimea is the only way the Russians have access to the Mediterranean area where they can assist Syria. So to get rid of that access was one of the primary targets. And by saying, nah, you're not going to have Crimea, they sort of stopped that.
Mm. Well, you know, can't these people just learn to get along? I mean, you know, couldn't they, learn to Chernobyl in the in the Ukrainian Republic, you know, earlier in the day? Or is it just all the foreign scum coming in and New World Order clowns?
Ukraine is a fictitious country.
It doesn't exist. I've been there and there was nothing. It was just a big hole in the ground covered by a sheet of tarpaulin.
No. What I'm trying to say is that in the First World War, there was, you know, you had this whole national thing. I mean, there were no big countries. There were tribes, you know. Germany only came into existence, I don't know, 125 years ago. Italy, 100 years ago, you know. So the Ukraine was just, there was an area that was called Ukraine. That meant something like at the border. But there was a group of people who said, we would like to have a Ukrainian fatherland. And the Germans said, what do you mean? What is Ukraine? There was no Ukraine. But the Germans then helped this little group to establish a Ukraine with part of Russia in exchange, or so they hoped, for grain, for pork, for eggs, for food. So Ukraine has, you know, if you look at the map of Ukraine over the centuries, at least 2/3 of it have always been Russian. And the people that are now being killed in Odessa and all the other places are Russians. They identify with Russia. They don't identify with Ukraine. They just happen to live in an area that is called Ukraine. But it is just something that somebody thought would be handy to have, and that's how it was established.
It must be handy for people who want to divide and conquer other people.
Extremely handy.
You know, it's like I got my bag of tricks here. What have we got up here? Well, we got a random country name, you know, region, regional dominance, paid off dictators. Here's one. We'll make up a country.
Yes, exactly.
It's like a bag of tricks, like a magician, more or less. Except instead of pulling a rabbit out of the hat, they pull out a nuke. Wasn't there some? You were telling me before the show today about some crazed woman who wants to drop a nuke on the Ukraine or something?
Yeah, Julia Tymoshenko. She's amazing. She was in jail, and she was in jail for a good reason. She's one of the most corrupt politicians the country has ever seen.
That's where she got the nickname Shanko, by the way, because she stabbed somebody with a shank. She made it out of a toothbrush.
Anyway, so she was liberated, and she was the ultimate victim. And anyway, so a couple of weeks ago, a telephone conversation was released with her saying, "What we have to do is we have to nuke," and we're talking about a lot of people, 8 million people, I think. We have to bomb them with a nuclear bomb, and we have to just kill them all, the Russians.
Yeah, that'll really calm the situation down.
Well, what has happened now, just today, a video was released wherein this woman said, "I want to thank the people who fought in Odessa." And what happened in Odessa was, of course, a hideous massacre of civilians by members of Svoboda and the ultra right, who hold 46 seats in the Kiev government, and who have direct links with the Nazi Party history, who collaborated with the Germans in the Second World War. And they to this day feel that they should kill all the Jews and that all the Russians should be killed. And so these people haunted a group of people who tried to escape in the Union building. And not only did they just set fire to the place, but they actually went in there and raped and killed and shot a lot of people, after which they torched the place with Molotov cocktails and burned another 40 people or so alive. I mean, it was a hideous crime, and there was nothing noble about it, except in the crazed minds of people like Yulia Tymoshenko.
Evelyn Gilbert from Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective, .wordpress.com has been my guest. Go and check out her website if you can. Also, bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is a listener-supported broadcast. So if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, that's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. There are PayPal buttons there, and also a Kiwi Bank account if you're capable of figuring out how to do an automatic payment into either of those. It'd be much obliged. Just keeps all the finances coming in. Listener-supported radio. Let's expose the scumbaggery. Let's not rely on big evil corporations. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest joining me now is the runner of Rush FM, Roy Harlow in Hamilton there. Roy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Good to be on.
By the way, I just wanted to kind of just thank you. It's been nearly 4 years now that the Vinny Eastwood Show has been running, and for most of that time, you've been kind enough to play episodes of the show on Rush FM. And I'm really quite grateful about that.
Not a problem. Yeah, we're grateful too, because I think you give a unique spin on some of these subjects, and it's I like the way you make them wake up.
Do I make people wake up on actually? I mean, I'm
Well, let me just paraphrase for you. You're not friggin' free.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Well, see, what I was thinking is that I don't actually wake people up per se. Like for me, the quote unquote wake up is when you go from believing everything the cops and politicians say to realizing that almost everything you've ever been brought up to believe in your entire life is just BS, and you get really stressed and depressed about it. That's what I call waking up. So my show isn't trying to wake people up. It's trying to keep those who are already awake to stay sane so that they're no longer stressed and depressed. And that's what the whole humor thing is about. And that's why it's not all like I have the documents, credibility. I don't care about that kind of stuff. It has no value for me. Sanity, on the other hand, and good people having a good laugh and enjoying their lives amidst the scumbaggery is important to me.
I agree, Vinny, and I think that's part of the presentation side that makes it attractive. I think that's what people are doing. They wake up and they go into this depression because, as you said, everything's not true. You know, Bob Dylan said it, all the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. And you see that, and when you do, it's a culture shock. And it's, you know, Susan Posel talks about that too. She's saying we're going through an identity crisis because your identity is built upon what you understand as your reality. And when you find that's bogus, you go, well wait a minute, where am I? And it's good to go, well, hey, don't worry about where you're at. You're still among us earthlings, and we can still carry on in spite of the fact that it's not the playing field we thought we were on, but we can still play.
It's true. Now, I was thinking about in terms of my role in the actual movement itself is integral and necessary. However, it's not the only role that's integral and necessary. You know, I mean, activists and whistleblowers, as far as I'm concerned, they do the real work, like the real hard work. They're the ones who have bullets coming through their windows at night. They're the ones who have their family members threatened, yeah, etc. I don't have any of that kind of stress and pain in my life.
Right.
And as a result, I'm still capable of keeping my head in a space where I'm happy. And I can make jokes about stuff. I haven't lost my sense of humor. These people are in great danger, I believe, Roy,
I agree,
of losing their sense of humor.
It is hats off to these guys. I mean, Jim Stone, freelancer, he's one who's, on the front edge. He lives in flux. You know, there's several of them. What's the Garner guy? Zen Garner. He lives in flux. There's quite a few of them that are really investigative journalists, and they're really giving you the facts. The trouble is that people are so far removed by the disinformation that they don't appreciate these facts, nor these guys' sacrifice. And I think that's one thing you and I get to do, being in the industry where we're actually presenting information that's truthful. We get to see how these guys are actually sacrificing a lot more than the populace can appreciate. And by presenting their information on Rush FM, for example, we do it more than once. Because this is another problem I see, is that these guys come through, or you and I, we come through as something that's informative, and it just goes by one time like a flash. And we're trying to use Rush FM as a repetitive opportunity. That spot gets played more than once. More people get a chance to hear it. And it brings a unity and consciousness. I get this all the time on our emails and people calling in the studio. They're going, oh, I thought I was alone. Everybody's telling me I'm crazy. You're just a conspiracy theorist, yada, yada, yada. And then they find Rush FM. They listen to Vinny Eastwood, and they go, I knew it. And they feel like they just joined a crowd, a family of people that are informed, and they felt an emptiness, a loneliness. But in their heart, they know this is not right. Something's really seriously wrong.
So you just encapsulated one of the best reasons for the existence of the Vinny Eastwood show, not just helping the activists or anything, but the listeners themselves. I mean, mate, feeling like you're alone amidst a sea of brainwashed morons isn't fun, is it?
No, it's not. And we all get to experience it together.
Yeah, especially if you're in Hamilton.
Well,
no offense.
I don't know anywhere that's exempt from the media contamination claptrap stuff.
You know, you really do have a good point there.
From screen addiction, you know?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, that's something that comes to mind a lot recently is just how much time we spend in front of screens. I recall yesterday watching a video that was posted on YouTube that is telling people that YouTube is ruining your life. Facebook is ruining your life because you're never actually making eye contact with anyone. You're never actually embracing anyone. You're never there to experience anything real anymore. You are so isolated from everybody, but your mind thinks that you're not.
Right. Agreed. That's the illusion. I agree 100%. We're doing something right now on Rush FM. We're bringing in texting. We could have a text line. People can text in because they're not skilled in calling and interacting and speaking their mind. They're semi-retarded in their interactive skills. So we're kind of taking a step toward them to give them an opportunity to take a step out of their box. And we're trying to use the text. We used to have this a few years ago when we first started with you. We had a text method, but it was kind of contaminated, and so we dropped it. And now I'm just reinstalling it on a new platform so that we can. These people have free texting on their phone, and they're living on their phone. It's the most amazing control over the human mind to have the guy carry his own control device around with him. Wow, what a coup that was.
Yeah. Oh, mate, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they're free. I have an iPhone. I'm free. Really?
That's right.
Does that iPhone by chance track you wherever you go and send all the information back to the NSA so that they know everywhere you are and automatically record all the microphones and video footage that's coming out of it and gets data? And gets data logged at the NSA complex in Cheyenne Mountain. Is that freedom? Is that
absolutely really not? And they turn around and rely upon it for their source of information. You say, "Oh, how do you do this particular calculation?" They go, "Oh, hang on." They turn their back to you and Google it.
Nobody knows it, eh?
And so this comes to school.
This comes to a very interesting point. I had a conversation with a former university student the day before yesterday, and he said that his final exam in university was a very interesting one. They didn't have it in a class. They had it at the National Library in Wellington. And the lecturer says, "Okay, everybody, you have 3 hours. Open your envelopes." Everybody's got a little envelope and stuff like that. They're all standing at the National Library. And inside every single envelope is a different topic completely unrelated to their current field of study. Right? And he says, "You are now at the National Library. You have a topic. You have 3 hours to write a 1,500-word essay on this topic, which you currently have no familiarity on. I don't care what you're capable of remembering, what you're capable of regurgitating, what you're capable of repeating, because it means nothing. When you go out into the real world, this is how it is. You have to know how to find information by yourself without anybody's help, even without the internet on occasion. This
Wonderful.
Is your job." And I was like, wow, that's
real.
That is university the way it should be.
Great.
Unfortunately,
well, this is the point, isn't it? The younger people, I mean, if there's any, you know, category, I guess I can't say that categorized, but the people, all right, they're not able to interact. They're not self-educating. They're not being educated. They're actually in this little teeny circle thing they're doing. Their lives are get up, go to work, come back, watch the TV, go to bed, get up. It's just a cycle. And they have their little variations in it all, but they're all humdrummed into their own little cul-de-sacs.
Well,
so where's
so
the interaction? Where's the knowledge? Where's the sharing of learning and caring? That's another thing that's falling down, is people caring about each other.
Isolation's really important in prison discipline. When you have prisoners that are acting up and what have you, you punish them by sending them into what? Solitary confinement.
Yeah.
What happens to somebody when they suddenly become a conspiracy theorist and they realize everything's a lie? What happens to all their friends? They put you in solitary confinement.
Yep, that's right.
All right. That's what happens.
And these iPhones, that's almost what they're doing. It's back to the Simon and Garfunkel, crowds of lonely people.
Mm.
And they are. You see photos of it now, a sidewalk full of people walking to school, and they're all glaring at their phones. They don't even know who's with them or around them. They're totally alone in their phone.
Yeah.
So it's really good to be broadcasting. And, you know, our listenership has increased a lot. Our hits on our website is just increasing really well. That's going up quite a bit. And we now know from our statistics there's no time, 24 hours a day, that there isn't a minimum of 20 people listening to Rush FM.
Now, can I ask you as well, what motivated you specifically to get Rush FM started? I mean, you kind of the whole time I've known you, you've been really, really into waking people up. That's never been my focus, but it appears to have been yours for quite some time. What got you into that?
Well, I guess a combination of things, as it usually is. I was involved in radio. I had been involved for almost 12, 13 years now, and I was doing a show at a community radio, agriculture program, a midday farm report it was called, and I was outside the box. I was not going down to pork weights are up and there's, you know, sheep costs and lambs or, you know, all that. I gave that crap a miss. And I was talking about environmental and self-sufficiency and sustainable farming. That's all I talked about for 7 years. And I worked that up as another type of education, because the farmers are still going, oh, organics, that's hippies and beads and sandals. You don't really take that seriously. But yet the data was showing that the people who were going for natural farming practices were outstripping the chemical stuff by miles. So that kind of put me on an informative basis. Then the other side of it is I have a pretty strong spiritual background. And from a spiritual point of view, you can actually see what's going on from the Illuminati concept down. They're trying to remove any type of faith and determination in us as individuals. They don't want us to have faith in ourselves. They don't want us to have a tight-knit family. They don't want us to have a mature interaction in our communities. They don't want us to have any relationship to God. They want all of that rubbed out, and they're trying in every imaginable way to replace those concepts with dependent on the state, dependent on money, dependence on their Illuminati global control. And I'm going, wait a minute, this is a godless motivation being molded and morphed into all these other downstream problems. And I think that's where we're at today on this idea that they've taken it further, that they want to be the controllers to the point it's who lives and who dies on their decision, not our own. And so what can be said? This is a war. It's a subtle, plain, invisibly based war. And so I'm going, wait a minute, I can't stand that. I can't succumb to that. And I believe it's time for there to be a platform. Radio was already in my life. Well, let's see what we can do here. And that's what I did. I started working. I took a station that was a mess, a total unbelievable mess. I can't even describe to you all the horrors that was going on in the studio. I mean, the stripper pole was in the studio, and I took a trailer load of beer cans and cases and rubbish out of the studio. So it was a real mess. They were tagging the wall inside the studio and all that. So it was a real mess. And I took it and shook it down and cleaned it up and started to find out, well, what is it that I'm going to get? What a broadcast. It's going to make people care and pay attention. And that's where Rush FM started. And I just went through going, well, I can't put on big, long, involved talkback programs. I didn't have the equipment, tools, support, etc. at the time anyway. And I feel that everybody is so distracted. You got to hit them with something that's a minute or two or three and get them thinking and let go. And that's the way I've structured Rush FM. Hmm. So we've been very successful. We have hundreds of spots and quotes and inserts, and we're constantly looking for insightful comments by intelligent people, those people that have had the opportunity to be in the front row, to hear something, to analyze in proper perspective. They've come forward relatively articulate and given something that the people can identify with. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'll give you, say, one very short one here. We have a very short spot that says, if all dollars aren't taxed the same, it's not a level playing field. So that's just a simplistic thought. And it goes on from there to sometimes 3 or 4 minute discussion about a particular topic or subject. And, well, we've hit the nail on the head. The people are coming back to us going, man, there's so many things that makes me think on Rush FM. And I go, that's what we want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Of course, because I think, what was it? I went out to a protest in Pukekohe to protest John Key, who was visiting out there at the time. Uh-huh. And a police officer came up to us, stopped me from protesting, and we talked with him for about 20 minutes after only protesting for 10. And the video got tens of thousands of hits, right? Nice conversation with the cop. It's always fun doing that.
Yeah.
And on my way home, my volunteer for the day, also named Vincent, asked me, you know, Vinny, why don't you take things more seriously? Why don't you try and report things with credibility and such and such? And I said, well, think about this, man. How many people are there doing that already out there? You know, people are really working hard to maintain their credibility and to report all the facts, etc., and are doing it really seriously. And he says, well, it's pretty much all of them. And I go, now, how many other people out there who are just having fun and making people not want to kill themselves? And he goes, well, basically, it's just you. And I go, okay, so what you're really asking me is, why don't you want to be like absolutely everybody else and not be original in any way, shape, or form, Vinny? You know, yeah, it's like, well, I think there's an obvious answer to that. Because I don't want to.
That's right.
What the hell is the point?
We don't need more sameness. We need the outside the box. Sameness always produces the same result. It's those of us who are outside the box, looking at it from a different point of view, have another take on it, and are presenting it in a unique fashion. Those are the ones that actually make people stop and think, well, wait a minute, this is sameness.
I can't be bothered with that kind of stuff, really. I mean, it's when was the last time you had an original idea, I like to ask people? And the answers are usually not good, bro.
And he turns to his girlfriend and says, when was it, dear?
Yeah. Because if you're a guy, you can't remember nothing.
No, hell no. And she says, the last time I gave you one. We're in a situation where we have to take an outside-the-box perspective so that people can be not necessarily shocked, but kind of out of the concept that this is just another report on the same subject. Because there's very serious shit going on. It's amazing how the spin is absolutely the opposite of the truth now. I mean, it used to be they had some bit of truth put in there with a little bit of lie, a little bit of deception, a little bit of word jugglery, and it formed their article or their conception of how to control humanity. But now it's gotten to the point, it's almost exactly the opposite of the truth every time you look deep into it.
And that's true. I have indeed interviewed activists before, and they told me that when they watch the news on occasion, they play the opposite game, and it's quite fun. You just sit there, you watch a news story, and you assume the exact opposite of everything that they're telling you, and it's a really funny game because 90% of the time it winds up being exactly what's
going on. Spot on. That's right. You get the real point of view if you play the opposite game. I hear you. I think you're right as rain. And I think that's what part of what you get to do in broadcasting and radio. You get to give them that opposite point of view from a factual point of view, if that makes sense. You're giving them that opposite concept, but with a perspective that makes common sense. Because I get this all the time. I know you do too. What is going on in this crazy world? Anybody with common sense or a little bit of intelligence and education goes, something's really wrong. What is going on here?
I got this idea as well that it's so utterly important to maintain a perspective on these things because there's too much knowledge out there for any one person to know. This is what I've started to realize is that I want to know as much as I possibly can. And the first thing I learned along that vein is realizing that I can't actually know everything.
Yeah.
Right. Which means that you have to go into life with a degree of humility. Don't you?
Definitely. You have to have a degree of humility. The humility is a reflection of your own self-confidence. A person can't be humble unless they have self-confidence.
Hey, you know, that's actually a very interesting point, because when you're arguing with people, say, like, I don't know, they're arguing with you about chemtrails and saying that they don't exist, et cetera, et cetera. And you're like, okay, well, here's this video with a 15-length plane-length contrail, which disappears almost instantly. And here's a video with a plane that leaves a streak from horizon to horizon, thousands of plane lengths long. And not only does it not disappear, it expands, attracts moisture from around it, and winds up covering the entire sky with a milky haze. And they go, oh, well that just occurs under certain atmospheric conditions. What conditions?
They're right next to each other at the exact same height with the exact same temperature.
The condition is denial. That's when it occurs.
Oh, yeah, the atmospheric condition, you know, denial can allow chemtrails to manifest, you know, like Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief or something like that.
I manifest chemtrail with my brain god powers.
Yeah, right. Here, let me share something with you. This is an email I got 2 days ago. I've just been on a short visit back to New Zealand after living abroad for 10 years now. On this visit, I stumbled across your station and must say I'm very impressed. Please keep up the good work with what you're doing. I've forwarded your website address to quite a few close friends now to add to your following. I'm 33 years old and constantly struggling to understand what the hell is going on in this world. The information you have laid out is such a help with making decisions to do with health, well-being, life choices, future challenges with my kids. The list goes on. It's not pushy. It's just providing the information, which is what I want. A huge thanks again, friend Phil. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff we're getting, Vinny.
Yeah. I get a lot of that too. And what's interesting is the compliments. This is how the brain works, or at least my brain anyway. You get 10 to 1.
Is this going to be too much information?
No, this is going to be pretty straightforward.
Oh, okay, good.
You get 10 to 1 compliments versus insults, but you remember the insults 10 to 1 versus the compliments.
Well, that's only human nature to make you try to improve. It doesn't have to wound you or give you a doubt in your mind or your heart. It's only an indication that there's room to improve. And if you take it like that, it's water off a duck's back.
It's true. You just got to learn to cope with it and deal with it, don't you?
Yeah, well, really, they have to deal with it. You know, as you sow, so you reap. If you're a SOB and you're calling everybody anything but a good word, well, it just ruins your life. It doesn't ruin our lives. We just go, oh, well, he's got a problem. But it isn't our problem. It's his.
Yeah. This is why I have fallen in love, a digital love, with the Facebook block function. Somebody comes at me, block, and you never hear from him again. Oh. It's blessed. I mean, I recall as a teenager when you get the odd pimple and what have you that's really, really big, fat and juicy, and you actually get this intense, sickening fascination, pleasure by purging that thing. All right? It's very similar sensation to that, I must say.
Well, what can be said, Vinny, the social spectrum of types of people, they're trying to make that all sameness. And you get two responses. The one response is what we do. We try to inform. We hold on to our individuality. We try to be constant and self-confident and do the best we can. And then there's the other people that get angry, agitated, full of hate. They just can't stand what's happening to them. But see, they don't understand. It's more a knee-jerk for them. Ours is more a intellectual repercussion.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Roy Harlow from Rush FM. In Hamilton, ladies and gentlemen, rushfm.co.nz is the website. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. We'll be right back.
Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us? Politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah, for all of us.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is from New Zealand today. Well, he's in New Zealand. He's technically from England. His name's Daryl Jones, and he's a local MC, virulent music DJ, and he's also a little bit into conspiracy and the occult, for that matter. Daryl, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Vinny. Appreciate it.
How many years have we known each other? It's been like nearly 5, 6, 10 years or some crap, and this is the first time we've ever bothered to invite you on the broadcast, mate. I'm sorry about that.
Nah, it's okay. Yeah, probably, what, I don't know, 7 years or something?
So yeah.
Quite a long time.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. We've had many a party together out on the town.
Yeah, you filmed quite a few of my events. I'm also an event organizer. Vinny has done quite a bit of nice filming and editing work as well. It's nice to be called a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, you know. Like, I tend to think of myself as quite isolated from mainstream thought, you know. So
yeah, well, the word isolated pretty much encapsulates a lot of the lifestyle of many conspiracy theorists, I can assure you.
Yeah. Well, what's the alternative? Being a coincidence theorist.
Yeah, pretty much. The other element that I wanted to discuss with you today is what exactly drives people within this realm. To define my point, I want to ask you as well. To being a bit of an entertainer and being around all these people, which I call, I guess the word would be soulless. All right, you know the type of people I'm talking about. They're all through the entertainment industry. They're not few and far between. They're the majority, and it's the good people who actually have an awareness of their surroundings and the implications of their actions, like yourself, that are the rare ones. What is it that actually gets that whole ball rolling for you?
Okay, if I understand the question, I think the entertainment industry is quite similar to the other big industries and areas of it's power, isn't it? If you're an entertainer, then you do have a certain amount of power over, you know, people's thought. I mean, people are hopefully, wrapped by what you're doing. So, I mean, what it is, I think, is a system that's been developed probably over like hundreds or even possibly even thousands of years, where the sociopath is promoted, like the scum rises to the top. I mean, obviously in entertainment, the talent rises to the top too. So you say the cream rises to the top and the scum rises to the top. It's the same with politics, entertainment, you name it really.
Mm-hmm.
So my position really is kind of interesting. I mean, I try and work with people that I see as, you know, good souls, not just people that have talent. You know, it happens all the time. You know, I book a lot of DJs and MCs and bands and stuff. And I mean, yeah, there's some really talented DJs and stuff out there who are just really unpleasant to work with because they're so self-centered. And to me, you know, often it seems like, you know, they display sociopathic kind of tendencies.
Well, the American Medical Journal states that a psychopath is a person who is really good and enchanting when you first meet them, but they ultimately don't have any depth to their personality or long-lasting relationships. And the industries that you are likely to find these people is business, entertainment, politics, law, medicine, and religion. What would you say are the most influential institutions of our time?
All of those. Those are the most influential institutions.
And so is it any wonder why the world is crazy? It's because psychopathic crazy people are frickin' running it.
Yeah, it's like a snowball effect, I think. It's a bit like a cancer, you know, the bigger it gets, the faster it grows. And I think that's a pretty fair comparison, and it is a bit disheartening to see it happen, you know, especially when, you know, these people are chosen over, you know, the rightful people. I mean, there's people out there who are wise and decent and would, you know, do a great job of running things, whether that be in politics or entertainment. And they are pretty much suffocated and, you know, marginalized and kept out the way and, you know, in positions that don't really utilize their strengths, while, you know, you get people getting promoted, you know, because they're corrupt. And this is a system-wide problem, you know. This is a human race problem, you know. It's so widespread. So the solution is, God, the solution's a tricky one, eh? I mean, it's...
Well, I think it's kind of like when you realize you're an alcoholic, step one is admitting it. All right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, just admit it, okay? Hi, I'm Vinny Eastwood, and I'm governed by criminal psychopathic scum.
Yeah, I mean, it would be pretty good if we could sort of uncover and fully reveal this paedophile network, you know. I hate to sort of have to bring it up, but it has to be brought up, doesn't it?
Oh, it has to be brought up over again and again, no matter how many people yell at you and scream at you and tell you they don't want to hear it. I'm sorry, mate, there are kids out there who don't want to be raped, and because you don't want to hear it, they will continue to be raped.
And this is the thing, in Hollywood and you know, the other big centres of entertainment, I mean, England has its own and so on, I mean, and politics and law, you're finding the people at the very top of the pyramid are all connected through these, you know, secret fraternities and business interests and stuff. They're all, you know, networked together. And, there's some pretty messed up stuff going on. And that kind of binds them together as well, doesn't it? Because they're bound in secrecy.
Well, especially if you remember the Freemasonic Brotherhood, that's bound by secrecy.
You know, it's also I find it very interesting in entertainment the way that they reveal things. It's like they have to tell you the messed up thing that they're doing to you. I don't know. I think that's part of the ritual. I mean, as we know, they're very fond of rituals, and
well, they're kind of like let's just call a spade here. These people are demonic entities. Okay, this is my belief. All right, and that demons are real, and good's real and evil's real. Okay, the problem is we don't. It's not what we think it is, and what these people are doing, if they are people. Allegedly, more or less is creating a satanic dominion on Earth. Right now, the analogy that one guest gave me one time, I thought was absolutely fitting. Vampirism. Mm. How does a vampire get you? He gets you in your home. How does he get in your home? He has to be invited in. So, it's our fault that we invite these people in, but it's not our fault that they are who they are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reminded of the beetle that makes itself smell like an ant and then crawls into the ant's nest. I mean, I'm not convinced. I'm on the fence about most things. I mean, I like to sort of maintain a sort of open mind. So I'll you know, build my theories and listen to other people's theories and construct them in my mind. And I think that's a really important ability to be able to do. It's really, really important to be able to consider things without having to adopt them. And I mean, eventually, you know, things start to concrete in your mind. But I really think that, you know, this idea that then that these people are not human, it comes from a number of things. I think it's partly because they're sociopaths or psychopaths, and that's, you know, part of what makes us human is empathy. And the other reason, I think, is because of the legend comes from the reptilian brain. I mean, our ancestors knew a lot more about medical and physiological stuff than we give them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they knew that there was a reptilian, you know, hind brain. And
the teachings of Don Juan and written by Carlos Castaneda specifically refers to these reptilian kind of snake demon sort of things, which attach to people's brain stems and take them over and control them like a robot sort of thing.
Exactly. So in my belief, I think that we all have the reptilian brain. We all have the potential to be that way, except we have, you know, the rest of the human brain as well. I mean, I'm not a physicalist or, you know, that just believes in you know, that we have no soul and stuff like that. I believe that it's all connected. I think our soul and our body exist on the same plane, actually. But I think that's where this lizard, alien lizard thing has come from. I think it's, you know, and also, you know, the macrobes thing as well. I think... you know, John Dee communicating with the macrobes and stuff. I mean, that's quite feasible to me. That fits into my belief, because I do think that I think life is everywhere, and I do think the universe is probably an organism.
Close enough.
It could be an orgasm as well. The Big Bang. I don't know.
Yeah. The Big Bang. The Big Bang sounded like this.
Yeah.
Sounds about right, doesn't it? You know? It's a lot sexier than the darkness of space.
The universe is a sexy place, my friend.
No Shiite Muslim, you're making some alien love tonight.
But it's the alien thing. I like to draw comparisons and build ideas like from these comparisons. I mean, I see the Earth. I mean, the Earth is shrinking, but I mean, it's still a big place. And the way that animals are spread out, and we have different biodiversity in different areas. I mean, and you have this question of pests. You know, New Zealand is a good case in point, because New Zealand, you know, originally, most obviously Kiwis know this, but perhaps your American audience wouldn't be aware that in New Zealand, I mean, there weren't really many mammals, only the ground-dwelling bat, and we've introduced a lot of creatures, basically. And people in this country criticize the pests. They criticize magpies, they criticize possums, you know, they shoot them and stuff like that, which is, you know, all right. I guess.
Which is ironic, really, because possums eat berries and then they crap the berries out after the removal and the fertilization process, and they actually help the bush. And so in an effort to help the bush, we drop one of the world's most virulent poisons, 1080, into pristine bush, as well as right on the borders of farmland, to kill these terrible pests.
It drives me nuts. I can't, you know, and we don't understand what that chemical is going to, how that's going to be reacting to all the other chemicals we're pumping everywhere else.
Yeah.
But the point I wanted to make is that, you know, we as humans, I mean, human beings, you know, supposedly weren't in New Zealand until, the Māori showed up, or the, you know, the Māoriori as well. So, I mean, originally it was an island of birds, and that was pretty much mostly what lived here. I mean, really, you know, human beings in our modern form, we're the pest. We're the only pest. We're the one that's brought these so-called pests here. So I really think, you know, we just need to accept that these animals are here now. Stop trying to poison them and kill them. And let them get on with it. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, we might have to do other things to support the native animals as well, but it doesn't necessarily have to be at the detriment of the ones that we've introduced. You know, it's you know, it's almost like the pot calling the kettle black. You know, mm-hmm. And actually, to make one more point, It's always the introduced stuff that they're like, okay, they're killing all the natives, and you know, what about?
What about us? Yeah. I was just about to say that. You know, what about the British that introduced themselves to New Zealand and started killing the natives? You know,
how about they just start? Yeah, exactly. You see where I'm going. And the reason I say that is because there is a comparison to be made there, and
it's characterized by the lack of empathy in the first place. Oh, these are pests, they need to be exterminated. Oh, these are unevolved people, they need to be exterminated and their land stolen, etc., etc. Again, psychopathic mindset. Same freaking thing the whole way through the entirety of history. It's still with us today. It never left.
I just think it's a bizarre situation that we've got ourselves into, you know, and I don't know. It's worrying. It's worrying to see all of the stuff that's going on. I mean, this is just one tiny aspect.
Well, I think there's actually two of the most interesting elements about being a quote unquote conspiracy theorist, which I proudly admit to being, because the alternative is being naive and freaking retarded. But the two very important parts of it is, number one, you got to deal with the anger, the depression, and the scumbaggery and what have you. And it's a lot of emotional freaking strain, more or less. And element two is actually dealing with the other people who are still asleep, who won't listen to facts, won't look at evidence, won't listen to reason, you know, that kind of thing. And they say that you're the crazy one, because you have facts and evidence and listen to reason, not in spite of the fact, but because of the fact.
They have to say that you're crazy because the alternative is too uncomfortable for them. You know, I mean, what I would recommend is I know it's really difficult to find positive news stories at the moment, but you're going to have to get creative and I don't know. I really think that, the mainstream news, they've realized this. They've started to try to put positive stories in there. I mean, and the only shit they could, sorry, language. The only stuff they can find is, you know, absolute nonsense like duckling crossing the road and stuff. So, I mean, hopefully we can do better than that. But I mean, you know, we really need to start, I think, covering our little, even no matter how small they are, victories, you know. I know that you do that. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because people don't want to hear about things. They don't want to know. They want to live in the bubble. And I mean, I can actually kind of respect that to a degree. I mean, life is so diverse. So much is going on. So much of it is wonderful as well. I mean, you know, no matter how bad things get on Earth, we're only one tiny little planet. Things, you know, I really think we need to just stop spending money on wars and just start exploring the universe, eh?
Yeah, I mean, that'd work out well for everybody, me thinks. It's like, hey, we haven't solved any of our problems here. Let's take them out to the galaxy.
Exactly. Well, what I'm saying,
you know, maybe it could be like, what was it that somebody told me? Oh, yeah, I was interviewing Gerald White about the moon landing hoax kind of conspiracy and that kind of thing, right? Yeah. And I asked him, what the hell is the point in going to the moon, you know? And what the hell is the point in going to Mars? I mean, sure, it'd be fun, it'd be cool, but at the end of the day, the only reason why we really, really need to go to the moon or need to go to Mars or anything like that is because we've got a planet here that we're fracking up faster than we can clean it up, and we're going to... And the only thing we really want to do is to spread throughout the solar system and eventually the galaxy as a human race into the future like a goddamn cosmic parasite.
It doesn't have to be like that, though, does it? I mean, I believe that we have the option, we have the choice, whether we want to be parasitic or whether we want to be, you know, beneficial. And I think actually not the whole, I don't think the whole human race is parasitic. I think,
oh, no, I don't think so.
Only
I
just about think 99% the ones, of us, you know,
I disagree. I think actually probably only between 1% and 4% are actual parasites. and the remaining between 99% and 96% are just good people who simply have their lives and minds controlled by the elite parasites.
Yeah, no, I do agree. It's just that I think what it is that 99% of people are taking, but not intentionally. Probably only if, you know, a couple of percent are deliberately, you know. I think what it, most people feel bad and guilty, I'd say, about the way that they live, their lifestyle, but they feel like they have no choice. Because it's not easy to grow your own vegetables. It's not easy to walk everywhere or cycle or, you know, get around with minimal sort of like footprint. And I mean, yeah, I know that the global warming is a natural thing because we're getting closer to the sun, but you know, we're definitely having an effect on the planet, and I think it's deliberate. You know, we're changing the chemical composition of the atmosphere, and that ties in with the chemtrails as well. I mean, I don't know if it's been debunked or not, but I saw this video the other day of an aeroplane landing, and they'd forgotten to turn off the
chemtrails.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are what they call what was it? Engine vortices, and somebody showed me a picture of a Emirates flight landing at Heathrow that had a very similar effect to what we were talking about there. But here's the interesting thing. It's what they call PSYOPs, psychological operations, for those who are uninitiated, is the whole idea that you can actually put out disinformation, and then when all the people who believe it without questioning it come out and tout it as evidence, etc., etc., then it makes every single person, even the people who didn't believe it in the first place, look like a freaking gullible idiot, and then the rest of the scum who just deny reality for a freaking living sit around going, yeah, see, look, they don't check their facts and evidence. Really, by chance, did you look at any of the hundreds of articles, videos, testimonials, documentation from US government agencies and NASA and the UN and all the patent offices and everything like that? Did you read any of that information that I said that I sent to you before claiming, blanketedly, of course, that there is no evidence to support chemtrails? Oh, no, I didn't actually read any of it because it was just chemtrail nonsense. Really, mate. So the reason why there's no evidence for chemtrails is because you refuse to look at it because you don't think there is any.
They don't want to believe that there is. And also, people just can't live. They don't want to try and live with the fact that they're being poisoned and that the planet is being destroyed, like, deliberately. People want to live their lives without this knowledge. So, and also there's the thing of cognitive dissonance as well. It's like, this doesn't fit in with my view of the world. So you've already built a view of the world in your head. You perceive it in a certain way, and anything that doesn't gel with that must therefore be, you know, fake. And the other problem that we have with the internet, or one of the challenges, is that it doesn't matter what you believe or what you think, any opinion will be validated online. Do you know what I mean? Not just any opinion, but any stance. Like, if you want to believe that cupcakes fucking invaded France, you know, you could probably Google it and it will come up. You know, it's like anything you want to believe now, you can believe. I think you touched upon a really important point there, because what we're finding is that they are co-opting the unveiling. So you get some real media people, underground guerrilla media type people, and they start to unveil, you know, like a government conspiracy, like chemtrails. So their response is to start unveiling chemtrails themselves, but doing it in a sabotaged sort of way that, you know, it leads people into the wrong direction, and it leads them away. It's very complex mind control, really. It is part of the mind control, and it's also creating avenues for people to go down, to help them maintain their paradigm that they want to have.
There's an old saying, if you want the revolution to be successful, wait, hold on a second, I've got that one wrong. what was it? The best way to defeat the opposition is to lead it.
Yeah, and that's what they do. And that's politics in a nutshell. I mean, everyone, so many people, I'm an event organizer, right? And I do a lot of events, a lot. And I know all the other event organizers in the city. And I know all the artists as well, right? So over the last 6 months, I've been getting loads of emails and Facebook messages from other organizers and artists trying to get me to help them with these voting drives. They, you know, they want to do these modular sort of events everywhere, trying to get young people to vote. And yeah, I mean, they're definitely like left-wing kind of people that are asking me to do this. But what I've said to them is that I don't believe that there's any party that's worth voting for. And even if there was, they wouldn't be allowed to win. Okay, and even if they did win, they would be sabotaged and worse things would happen. It's like, say, if some new party were to like come up and they were like, you know, a real party of the people, you know, that really, really wanted to like see this country become independent and get rid of Monsanto, GM, you know, all the things that we really, really need to do, in my opinion. They would, if they somehow freakishly managed to win and they weren't, you know, and the election somehow wasn't rigged, even if they did win, we would see there would be a shitstorm, and probably there would be, you know, they would find a way to get them out of power.
Did you hear about Operation Catapult, Daryl?
No.
No? The largest military exercises in New Zealand history, more US and foreign troops on our soil than since World War II. And guess what the drill was? To remove New Zealand's government and replace it with their own. And there's a NATO operation, and that was that happened just late last year. Unfortunately, Daryl, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for participating in the broadcast today, and may the events that you plan in future be terribly successful. And do you have a MC Projectile website of some description where people can go and perhaps hire your wares or get you to rap a battle with them or whatever?
Yeah, I can be contacted at mcfulltime@gmail.com. I have a website, www.baseinthepark.com. I've got an event called Sin coming up on the 23rd. Last thing I just want to say, Vinny, you know, there's a lot of dark conspiracies and a lot of bad stuff going on in the world, but, you know, at the end of the day, it is, a beautiful planet that we live on, and being alive is a gift. And I just want to say the greatest conspiracy of them all is the conspiracy for Jah Rastafari watching over us.
Yep, that's right. And I'd say that the second greatest conspiracy is making us believe that we're not powerful enough to overpower the conspirators.
Bingo.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
Plain to see, set us so fire, something so.
back to the final segment. Ladies and gentlemen, my special Kiwi guest right now is Richard Osmaston from the Money Free Party, otherwise known as the Free Money Party, which is very much pleasing all the socialists out there in New Zealand. The problem of which is you run out of people's money to spend, as Reagan said. And Reagan also got shot. You know, there's two. It's two wonderful things happen in the same time frame. It's just so what. Okay, and Richard, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. Great to be here, Jeff.
Okay, give us a little bit of background about yourself and what it is you do, please, brother.
Cool. All right, Vinny. Well, I'm actually a farmer. I farm pigs, and my daughter raises horses up here at Lake Rotorua in the South Island. But I'm an aircraft engineer and a pilot by trade, but I seem to have found myself doing politics, which was never my intention, but that seems to be the way things goes. And our proposal is we're registering the Money Free Party, and we are proposing to make everything free and everything voluntary. And we see a world in which we don't even have any money at all. There is no false value systems, there's no trade or barter. And everything is free and everything is voluntary. Does that make sense?
Zeitgeist, Venus Project kind of thing?
Precisely, yeah.
Okay. So you're advocating a resource-based economy, more or less?
Exactly, Vinny. Yeah, thank you for saying that. Not everybody puts those words together yet, but it is definitely coming, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not a new idea. Ultimately, what I'd like to do is actually have it see the Venus Project idea done,
yeah.
You know, at least yeah. Once, you know, it'd be great to see a city run on the particular system. But
yeah.
What I found was the drawback with the system is that it has to be global. I'm not 100% sure how it would work on the micro as well as the macro. And
yeah.
And the problem is, what if it doesn't work at the macro either? What if we restructure the entire world for this perfect new resource-based economy, and it's a complete balls up?
Yes, could we go back? I know that's always a sort of something little nagging in the back of our minds, but the way we see the concept, Vinny, is slightly different from that of the Venus Project. And I've spent a lot of time with those guys, and with Zeitgeist people and the Money Free Party in the UK as well. And, of course, we have Ubuntu now in South Africa. You know, we're not alone in doing this. This is huge around the world. But without sounding too sort of conceited, I think conceptually we're actually further ahead than all those organizations. And, you know, it's funny. New Zealand's a funny little place, eh? It's the sort of place where quite often, and we can see it historically, things have happened first here around the world, you know, compared to anybody else, because, you know, relatively educated, forward-looking, sort of civilized, small country, and you can get on fast here, you know, and we've seen that before. And because of the way, I mean, especially with a sort of Nelson-type community, there's a lot of enthusiasm for this kind of thing. There's a lot of educated, sort of charismatic, cosmopolitan minds here, and we can really progress this kind of thing a lot in a way that you probably couldn't with the same, how should we say, intensity in a place like London or even Auckland or, you know, Los Angeles or Florida. It's, you know, everywhere is different, isn't it? Excuse me. Anyway, our concept for the actual process of transformation from a money-based economy to a resource-based economy only takes place in people's minds, and we don't really need to build a new city. We don't need to have a new societal model or new computer systems or training or anything, because we've actually got everything we need already. And, I mean, it's just a process of sort of thrashing it out. And what I find is, you know, I've been promoting this for really 5 years, pretty much full time now. Once people understand, then they realize, wow, we've got everything we need already, and all we have to do is understand. That's the only difference between nirvana and this sort of chaos that we're in at the moment. We're ready. As far as I'm concerned, we're totally ready.
Well, how ready are we? I mean, exactly what would be the transition scheme? Because if you're going to take a monetary-based economy into a non-monetary, voluntary-based economy,
yep.
How exactly are you going to persuade the current business elite who benefits so much from it? And also, reach the much poorer communities who are politically apathetic?
They are politically apathetic, I agree with you, but I mean, I've spent most of my, I'm recruiting members for the Money Free Party, you know, I need 500 signed up members to register the party, and I've spent a lot of time talking to disadvantaged and, you know, more sort of fringe areas of society, and this works for everybody. And what I think what makes this different to any other major change, I mean, and I do mean in the whole of history, is that this benefits everybody. And the business elite that you're talking about are not the ones that you have in mind. How old are you, Vinny?
I'm 29.
Oh, well, oh, mere slip of the lad. Well, but because we base our expectation of the future on our experience of the past, okay? And we think of, you know, these awful business leaders, sort of psychopathic monsters who just want to grind people into the ground and get their money out of them. But modern business leaders are not like that. If you start thinking of Richard Branson's, Mark Zuckerberg's, etc., you know, the truly modern business leaders, and what I've been doing since I've been promoting this, is going to exactly those people that you've just described, who we all think of as heinous monsters, and saying, look, what would this be like for you? And, of course, these people do have empathy. Yeah, okay, they're cunning and ruthless, and they work very hard, and they're trying to get the most out of everybody. But at the same time, they have a social conscience. They have an environmental awareness, and they're not the monsters that we're thinking of, you know, the Rupert Murdochs and the, you know, the great industrialists of the past.
Who, like David Rockefeller, who's still alive.
Yeah, I mean, yes, of course, some of them are probably monstrous, but they are.
They even admit, you know, and brag about it.
Exactly. And at their level, I mean, it doesn't really matter. But to them, you know, they're totally detached in some ways from reality. But what we're seeing now, the modern business leaders, the majority of them, they are actually becoming aware. And of course, with the climate threat, that doesn't leave anybody out. You know, we're all involved in that. We're all sharing the same climate. And so nobody can go on in sort of blissful ignorance just because they've got a massive marble palace and loads of guards. You know, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for anybody. And I mean, one of my favorite expressions from sort of seems to have appeared from the campaign is that today, even the rich are poor, you know, and it wasn't long ago. I mean, even in our lifetimes when, you know, you could sort of blissfully live with a sort of a social inequality that really didn't affect you, you know. But now we realize as a society that, you know, big levels of inequality are so bad for all of us that you just can't carry on like that. You know, it doesn't work for anybody. It certainly doesn't work for the poor, of course. It never did. But it doesn't work for the rich either because, you know, they share the same streets. They have, you know, everyone is connected to society. You can no longer sort of live in ignorance, you know. Does that make sense, Ian?
I don't know. I think you'll be surprised just how much ignorance people can live in, despite the contrary evidence available.
Well, the thing is, with the resource-based economy, which makes it different to every other change throughout history, is everybody wins. And even the most successful business people, they will be better off once we transition to a monolith economy. Everybody wins, and that has never occurred before in history. Every social change has always involved somebody losing and somebody winning. And of course, those who are losing don't want to give that up. And we do see a sort of insecurity, and people are clinging on to sort of the old ways. But as we get better educated, and the people get better connected, and they're more aware of, you know, as you say, social inequality, environmental degradation, it's changing on its own, you know. Going back to the actual transformation process itself, I mean, I see it as so easy. And once people understand, I do a lot of presentations to school groups and young people, and they get it, you know, without our brainwashing that we've all grown up with, they get it straight away. It's so easy. And the actual transformation process itself is already beginning. I mean, I went to the inaugural meeting of a men's shed, and I think there's about 40 in this country now. I think there's some 300 in Australia, which is totally voluntary. People go there just because they want to. They want to contribute. They want to share socially and be with other people to do good things. And, of course, in New Zealand especially, when you look at how much volunteering is already done by people who are stressed, exhausted, broke, worried about the future, but they still pitch up and do stuff in the evenings and weekends. I mean, St John's Ambulances, I think it's you'd have to check the figures, but I think it's 70% voluntary. You know, the rural fire service, you know, assistance for schools and charity shops. I mean, the voluntary work that is done here is massive. It's people, you know, it's not like this is a totally new concept. I know we don't see the majority of society as working moneyless, but actually we're all doing a bit of it already. And I mean, one's only got to look at your own family to see examples of, you know, we're not counting every bean. We, you know, we just share, and it works out very well that way, you know.
Well, it seems that when people are doing the right thing, things sort of happen in a universal sort of way to make it work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, I mean, one of the things that's come up since I've been on the campaign, I don't think I told you, Vinny, I ran for the mayor of Nelson back in October in the local elections. So we've had this on a big, high-profile public platform before. A lot of questions and answers, interviews with TV3, on the radio, in the paper, sort of all the time down here in the Nelson Mail. And, you know, this has been thoroughly tested in our region. And, yes, it's fair to say a lot of people don't fully understand the resource-based economy yet, but nobody can break it. I've never had a decent show-stopping reason for not carrying on, because this is so important. You know, I mean, I say with utter sincerity, Vinny, I see this as the most important thing that has ever happened. Okay.
Well, you're talking about the restructuring and hence saving of our current deadly, horrific society that doesn't serve anybody but a few wealthy business elite that basically set it up.
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. And so this is, you know, this is big stuff. And sometimes these things can be a little tricky in the beginning, but make no mistake, you know, I see it as the most important thing that has ever happened, really. Yeah. And by taking it to a bigger audience, I mean, we just keep testing it further. And I mean, there's no decent objections to doing this, you know. Everybody wins. One of the put it in a nutshell, phrases that's come up recently from sharing this with a lot of, I mean, that's all we do is share it with people and see what they think. You know, this looks like a great idea. This looks like it's going to save us all. This is it. This is salvation. What do you think? And because I'm not an economist or a sociologist, you know, I'm just a guy, I don't really know, I have to ask. And I think that's made this development program very different, because I haven't squirreled myself away in an office in Wellington for 5 years and written a huge book. I've just gone out on the street and just talked to ordinary people, you know, but at every level of society. And all I have ever got is reinforcement and, oh, sweet, bro, that could be a good idea. And, okay, this might be difficult. We talk to somebody else and we come up with another solution to that little problem. And sure enough, it's all in our brainwashing. There's nothing wrong at all, you know. The point I was coming to, this sort of expression we've come up with, is when you have a money system or any sort of false value system or even a barter system, we reward those who take the most, basically. We revere those who have done the most taking. Whereas once we are moneyless in a resource-based economy, we'll still have people who are show-offs and people who are leaders and people who want power and people who want to be the number one, but they will be revered because they have done the most giving. And that is utterly transformational. You know, that turns conventional society on its head. Suddenly, the goodies will be rewarded and revered, and they will be the famous people, the people that we look up to, rather than at the moment, we look up to those basically who have done the best job of exploiting others, you know, or the planet.
Like the Prime Minister.
Wow. I mean, really? You know, if you've taken, you know, in a finite world, which, you know, we've only recently discovered that it is finite, you can't blame the people in 1900 or 1950s, they didn't know. But yes, today, if you have more than your fair share, you can only get it by exploiting someone else, you know? That means someone else has gone without, and I mean, I don't feel great about that. Yeah.
You know, and this is the idea, of course, is creating abundance for everybody. Yes. What's difficult is, like, when you talk about resource management, resource extraction, etc., like that, where do human rights come into it, you know, and private property? And, I mean, are you talking about abolishing private property? So if somebody's got a home that's been in their family...
Not at all. No, not at all. The sort of fundamental key to this is the fact that in a false value system, as you have at the moment, it's me versus you. And that is universal. It's 7 billion versus 7 billion people. It's every man for himself. Even, you know, it comes down to your choice of marriage partner. I mean, everything has a financial element to it, and nobody can really behave truthfully because of this overriding system. It's a competitive system, every single one against every single other one. Whereas in a resource-based economy, when there is no false value system, we're all on the same side. And if you get 7 billion people cooperating, which is ultimately what actually everyone would like to do, then you solve every problem you can think of. Actually, you know what? Almost effortlessly. Because, you know, 7 billion make up one hell of a team, you know. That's a lot of people pushing in the right direction. You get them all pulling in opposite directions, and you end up with basically what we've got today. Private, I mean, ownership and property. I mean, do you own your own shopping trolley, Vinny?
No.
Why not? You know?
Well, because it's provided for me for free.
Well, exactly, and they're easy to make in a factory. They're not difficult to make, and I mean, why would you want to own one? You'd have to maintain it. You'd have to lock it up. You'd have to build it yourself. Just borrow it, mate, and give it back, you know, like a library book or a rental car or, you know, a super yacht. I mean, all these things are freely available in the Nelson Marina, where we spend a lot of time. I mean, there's 600 yachts there. Most of them never go anywhere. There's plenty of everything for everybody. Why you would want to own your own shopping trolley or own a whole library? I mean, do you want to look after it? If you really want it, you can have it. But personally, I'm happy just to go there, borrow the book I need, and when I'm done with it, I give it back. You know, we're doing this already. It's not an alien idea for us. This is so natural to borrow something, have the utility of it, and then give it back. I don't own a train either, you know, or a jumbo, but I know I go in all those quite often.
Do you own pants?
Your own pants?
Like your own pants, you know, like you put them on in the morning, you go out the door so people can't see your genitalia swinging in the breeze.
Yeah.
In the system, would we own our own pants, or we'd go borrow them for an extended period of time and then chuck them out, or what?
I think it's up to you, mate. It's not difficult, mate.
What you've done there, and I think it's quite brilliant, is you've described all the larger things that we're already using in public and we're already using in concert. However, yep. It's actually the small things that really make up our lives, you know, these little ornaments or pictures that we have on the walls, all of these kind of things.
Yeah.
Who's going to make them? Where are we going to borrow them from?
I mean, you can go to Kmart or the warehouse, and they're basically giving them away, you know. I mean, in fact, if you go to the dump or the charity shop, they are giving them away. And if you don't have a monetary influence, you know, a little trinket from a charity shop, you know, to a child who hasn't been influenced by Coco Chanel and, you know, the diamond industry, is just as happy with a little trinket that her friend made or one that Granny picked up at the charity shop as she is with a $10,000 thing that, you know, cost lives and resources to dig out of a mine in South Africa. You know, what is value? And, of course, to people who aren't brainwashed by the money system, mostly actually value is something with love in it. And, you know, just as, you know, one's own child makes a little, I don't know, piece of jewelry or, you know, does a painting at school, and it's very, very precious to us. And without a money system, those sort of things with real value, because they had love in them, will come to the fore. And the things that are actually exploitative, such as diamonds or gold or expensive cars, will disappear, because it's just, I mean, you know, who wears fur coats today, you know? I know they're very warm, but as a society, we don't really look up to people who wear mink fur coats anymore, you know? It's changing.
I think it is. And if society's changing, that means the government representative to change with it.
Yeah.
However, what I find interesting is that the government seems to, shall we say, adopt the opposite purpose, where if society is changing, they try as hard as they can to stop change in its tracks, ironically campaigning at the same time on a platform of change.
Indeed. Amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, but the way I see it, Benny, is, you know, the government is just another institution. It's sort of this behemoth monolith. That sounds good, isn't it? And what is the purpose of an institution? At the end of the day, in the long term, it is to maintain itself, regardless of the need of the little soft humans that may come and go. And so thus we get the institutions of education, government, industry, etc., they remain, and the people come and go, don't they? You know, we're just little soft things that are processed through that institution. And I would say that the government, you know, is just another form of monolithic institution that doesn't know how to change. And of course, it threatens its very self in a monetary system if it does change. And that's the last thing the institution, you know, is designed to do for itself. So it continues regardless of the needs of the people.
I find what's strange about politicians, like career politicians, for instance, is that you get born, you go into kindergarten, you go to middle school, and then you go to high school, then you go to university, and then you go into a government job, and you've never actually had a real job in your life, never actually really gotten the opportunity to put your creativity into gear, and then all of a sudden you put your copious quantities of rules into play that annihilates your creativity, and then because you don't have any, you start to impose all those rules that were imposed onto you onto other people because you don't have any either.
Yeah, institutionalised behaviour. Yeah.
Right, so that's what a government has actually turned into. It's turned into a negative feedback loop of dependency. Now, if it's possible to actually reverse that negative feedback loop, turn it into a positive, it means that nobody should be dependent. Everybody should be independent and actually contributing to the greater whole rather than asking what the greater whole can do for them and how they can bludge off of it.
Absolutely. I totally agree, Vinny. Yep. Yeah, and the way to get there is not by striking at the head of government. Much as I'd like to see John Key or the boss of Monsanto or the oil companies or the mining people, you know, all these supposed enemies of the people, you know, they've been pushed into those positions. I mean, it's partly due to their psychopathic nature, but...
poor psychopaths, I mean, you know, give them a break, ladies and gentlemen.
No, they're lovely. I know, they kiss babies, I've seen it. But... you know, this is what you get in a competitive system. Those who are the most ruthless, the most cunning, will gradually rise to the top.
American Medical Journal agrees with you that psychopaths are really successful in general. They've got this subset called a corporate psychopath, and they find their way into the main institutions, religion, business, politics, entertainment, law, and medicine.
Yes, any structure whereby trampling on your colleagues, you get ahead, basically, and you trample on the everybody else, basically. That's the only way to get up, is to stand on somebody else. That's exactly right. And I mean, one of the things I find very frustrating but also very encouraging is that there are so many, how should we say, enemies out there, baddies, you know, whether it be the whale hunters or the psychopaths or the murderers or the car stealers, the shoplifters, the druggies. You know, any one of these things that people are protesting against, and of course they're almost unlimited number now, especially on Facebook, they're coming up every day, aren't they? Oh, join my anti-this group or my anti-that group. But this is not the enemy. The enemy is already within, and it's a little bit of every single one of us in the money system itself, where we've got this competitive system that means you've got to fight for everything. And at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think much of those guys who used to hunt whales, but they didn't do it because they loved killing whales. You know, they did it because they were poor. And if they weren't poor, there was a guy down the street who was homeless who would give his eye teeth for that job so he could feed his family. And what you're really fighting when you're protesting about something you feel strongly in your heart, you're fighting people who feel strongly about something in their stomach because they are starving. And, you know, ultimately, the bottom, right at the bottom of the pyramid that you can call Monsanto or Anadarko or, you know, any of these older baddie companies, at the bottom of those pyramids are poor people. And there's no way that a well-meaning, lovely, gentle, you know, hippie from Golden Bay who really hates the fact that people club seals can compete with someone who is starving, you know? On the one hand, we've got social conscience, but on the other side of the balance, we've got total deprivation. You know, people who are truly starving because they can't get a job. And you'll never overcome it by tackling these foes at the head. You know, we can only, and this is the great thing about it, all we have to change is the system itself. We don't have to take all those baddies down, you know. It seems so clear to me, Vinny.
Yep, well, everything seems clear. And you know, until you dive under the water and you realise the murky depths you've wound up in. Richard Osmaston, good luck in your foray into politics. The Money Free Party, does it have a website by chance?
Yes, it does. Moneyfreeparty.org.nz, Vinny, and we're big on Facebook as well. Same thing, and we're resource based economy on Facebook too. Yeah.
Moneyfreeparty.org.nz. Ladies and gentlemen, go and check that out. This concludes another exciting episode for the Vinny Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for listening, especially those who are tuning in on the radio broadcast on the New Zealand Network's Rush FM network, Ifinity FM network, and also Dagsy FM. You know, you just gotta love the Dagsy. And just check out our books as well that are on the webpage, The Crowdfunding Revolution, The Range of Illusion. And if you are keen on sponsoring the show, you know, just give us a contact through the website contact page, or just start making a donation or an automatic payment into the bank account or the PayPal any old time you please. This is listener supported broadcasting, and let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, none of the mainstream media are going to give adequate coverage to the issues that we discuss on the show that really need to be heard about in long form, because there's just too much information to compress into a 30-second soundbite and then tell you something completely different next so that you forget what they just freaking told you. I love my job.
Benny, how did you get so cynical? Oh, dear.
You know, reality. Isn't it a bitch?
Isn't it? Wow, you're so onto it. Thank you, mate. That was really great. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, Richard.